you are listening to the podcast That's Life in Sweden, or as we say in Swedish, Sånt är livet i Sverige, with me, your host, Lisa Orsimäki. Today, I want to welcome author, journalist and former chair for the Swedish Peace and Arbitration Society, Agnes Hellström, to the podcast. Welcome, Agnes, and how are you?
Thank you very much. I am doing well. I'm currently in Stockholm, and the weather is not as spring-like as I would have wished for, but I'm in a good mood. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. And here in Gothenburg, the sun is shining and it's all 9 degrees.
All right.
we're on our way. We are on our way. Summer.
We're on our way.
Yes.
And very typically Swedish to talk about the weather as the first thing. Yes. Also.
But this is what we do, isn't it? I'm so over it. I have to start off the conversation in a different way. But look, I'm so happy you are you have the time to talk this morning, and let's get into it. So between 2016 and 2022, you chair the Swedish Peace and Arbitration Society. Can you share some of its background about the society and the reason you accepted the leadership position as their chair?
Of course. Well, the Swedish Peace and Arbitration Society was founded in 1883. So last year we turned 140 years old. So we are the oldest still active peace organization in the world, actually. So it was founded by politicians in Sweden who in the end of the 1800s felt that the militarization of the country was too intense, and also Sweden wanted to introduce obligatory military service, and at the same time men certain men didn't have a vote even, so it was like part of that discussion the like increased military spendings, men being obliged to go to war without having a vote. And this organization was founded to be a different voice of reason, you could say, for human security, but many years before that expression was even invented. So actually the founder was I lost the word, but he received the Nobel Peace Prize in 1908 after the union between Sweden and Norway was it was made without any violence. So it was like a very peaceful independence of both countries, and he was awarded for his work into this coming true.
Yeah, okay.
The negotiations, yes.
Right.
And in Sweden, it was something that many politicians and militaries was against, because it was some kind of failure to lose this increased like part of Sweden, but for the majority of the Norwegians it was of course something great, and for the majority of the Swedes also of course, that we didn't have to be in war. And since then the organization has worked a lot with the same kind of issues and topics, but the recent years the Swedish arms trade has been top of mind to make sure that Sweden doesn't export arms to countries in war and dictatorships. Unfortunately with the NATO membership that has changed quite a lot here, so it's now it's a much harder debate to be part of, I would say.
Are you a pacifist?
Yes, of course I am, and that's also something I think we should talk more about. I think it's like the expression feminist, actually, that people think it means something else than it does. Because for me, pacifism is a person who chooses the non-violent solutions before the violence as far as it's possible. Mm. But it's not that I would never, during any circumstances, not make resistance. And for me also, resistance is so much more than armed violence. And I think that's like the mix-up in the discussion also, because the pacifist movement was it was founded to it was there to balance the militarism, because it's opposite in a way. It's anti-militarism and pacifism. For me, it's the same thing, and it has nothing to do with being passive. On the other hand, you choose the non-violent and the peaceful ways to solve conflicts, and mm-hmm. that's what UN is about. That we should have laws that international law that we never break. So, and that's why we should have less war and more dialogue and diplomacy. And when it doesn't work, and if someone attacks me or whatever, of course I would use self-defense, and most pacifists would. Mm-hmm. But in the debate, it's spoken about as they are passive cowards who just would want to see Ukraine sign, for example, in the debate with the invasion of Ukraine. That's been used.
Yes.
So I am a pacifist for sure.
A pacifist is someone. Is not necessarily someone totally against self-defense or what I would consider righteous violence. Mm. It is.
Mm. Yeah, for example, Mahatma Gandhi is one of the most famous pacifists in the world. And he was really clear about that it's worse to be passive than to use violence if needed to defend yourself. So it's more of how we want the world to be, that we should, the last choice should be arms and violence. We should use all the other tools before that we could come to that. And now it's the opposite, I would say. We just talk about the military and the military solutions for almost every problem or crisis we have. And that's why it doesn't work. Mm. It only gets more tensions, more wars, more suffering, and on the cost of everything else that we need to make sure our lives and our societies are safe.
Mm. What were the reaction of your members? Because you were still part of the organization, including yourself, about when you initially heard, or when the initial talks about a NATO membership was happening here in Sweden. And I think it would have been even before the Finns had been included in NATO.
Yeah, it's really interesting to look at how Sweden was depending on Finland, because from out of nowhere, almost, we just started talking about Finland and walk hand in hand with Finland. And it hadn't been on the agenda in many years, I would say. But the debate about NATO it's been going on since I became chair in 2016. And it's been a lot of politicians and also other, like from the arms and industry also, lobbyists who really wants Sweden to join NATO. Mm. So once a year, there's a conference in the north of Sweden, in Sälen, where the debate always in January is about that Sweden needs to join NATO. And after that, decreases a bit, and we talk about other things for a while. But in 2022, it was the tensions around the border of Ukraine and the debate in Sweden. So it just continued. So for me, it was being in the middle of it. It came kind of sudden, but at the same time, I knew this has been like going on for a while. So it was in a way the perfect storm for the ones who wanted NATO, because we had an invasion. We had Finland started talking about that this NATO option. I don't know the word in English for that, but that they had, that they could like join whenever they decided to, and then also the people of Sweden who started get really afraid and changing their minds a bit about whether or not joining NATO. And also all the we have on our big newspapers, we have opinion journalists and the paper in general are pro or con NATO, and all of them changed for being pro. And that's why the voices that spoke about NATO were all pro NATO. And it felt like a bit of a storm,
yes.
A NATO storm, a tumbling in over Sweden. So I think our members, they were a bit shocked of it happening so fast. And also, I think that many people and also the media, they mixed up Sweden and Ukraine. They said, they made like it was the same thing that Ukraine was being threatened. Meant that Sweden was being threatened at an invasion of Ukraine. If that was probable or possible, the same was the situation for Sweden. And that's not the same thing. It's really different, different countries and different history and also different tensions. So that happening and the like emotion argument that they used made the people feeling that there was no other choice. But the majority of the Swedish people didn't want to join NATO, not until the membership application was actually signed. So I think the people was more hesitant than the ones who had the loudest voices.
It was basically pushed through.
Now,
at the time, you began writing your book. Now, in Swedish, it's Fredsfittan. And in English, it's a very provocative word.
I actually like the English version, the peace pussy, because I think it sounds really good. But I also think it's interesting because I spoke to an English writer at the book fair in September, and he got really enthusiastic about this, and he wanted a T-shirt with the peace pussy printed on it. So I think it's also to like reclaim or claim the word for the like female genitals. We don't have any. We don't have any who aren't provocative, and I think that's problematic also because. With, well, dicks or what, penises or whatever can be used in military context as so much all the time without anyone reacting. So I think it's also, I want it to be provocative, but it's also something for me, it's a good word. It's something I'm calling myself. It's not something that I have been called by others.
Agnes, I think when you say peace pussy, it's great. Yeah. I was thinking about a word that I, you know, men would use because they get angry with women.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So, but great. So I'm so glad you clarified because I thought, please clarify it. And perfect. Peace Pussy, a great book. It should be translated into English for everyone to read. But can you talk about your book and how did it come about?
Well, actually, I had decided when I started as the chairperson that I was going to step down after 6 years. So it's been had been decided for a while. And this happened with the storm and the NATO debate and the war and everything. And I quit the job in May. And I was so exhausted and frustrated and felt like I had let my sisters down in a way that I should have stayed. And at that moment, I was contacted by a publisher who actually was my publisher with a book I wrote 10 years ago. And he asked me if I saw a book in everything that had been going on in my life. And first I felt, oh, no, I can't do this again. I have to rest from this. But then I felt that this I have to do this. In Swedish you say tidsdokument. I don't know if you use it in English.
It's a time
document.
It sounds
really strange.
Yeah.
But it's like this is a historical turnaround in Sweden, and it was in so many levels it changed our country, and it also affected our democracy, and it affected me as a peace activist, and I wanted to write the book. So I said yes, and I also felt that I wanted it to come out as soon as possible, maybe to make people realize how fast everything had gone and maybe change something. So I started writing it really intense just the year. So it that year, yeah, I finished it, and I think in April, and then it came out in September. So just a year, a little more than a year after I stepped down, the book came out.
Wow. So what would you say would be the most, say, three takeaways from your book that really you believe are important to you?
Well, I would say it has like three legs. First, I looked at the politics, what happened, what made the Social Democrats change their mind so quickly. And I also looked at the debate and the journalism, who took part of this debate, who were they, what did they stand for, were they really objective, how did the journalism fail? And then I also looked at the democratic problems with this. Why didn't we have a referendum? Why didn't we wait for the elections? Why was it in such a hurry? And why did no one look into or see the risks with Turkey, who had been really open about it during the whole time? So that was like the topics that I looked into, and the kind of core of the book is my story. Because my husband, he was born and raised in Ukraine, and had friends left. One of them disappeared just the first days of the war, and we still haven't gotten in touch with him. And also a Ukrainian family moved into our house just 2 weeks after the invasion. So the personal story is about, yeah, the other parts that aren't shown in this kind of debate, and the situations for the refugees from Ukraine, and the hope that made me going to make this war stop in another way than, well, now it's still going on. So I'm like, the hope was that Russia would step back and peace would come, but it still hasn't happened, and it's been going on since then. So it's it has a lot of layers, the book, but I hope that people can read it as a story of a peace activist in a really hard time when the Swedish politics changed radically in a way it hadn't done for 200 years.
Mm-hmm. So why do you think there was not a referendum about the NATO membership here in Sweden?
I think there was several explanations of why there weren't any. First, it was the rush that it had to happen now, because we had to enter NATO now before we were more or less invaded by Russia. And then there were actually people saying that if we got to vote, we would vote wrong. We would say no, and that would not be good. And then there was also people saying that Russia would influence the elections. But then there are so many arguments against those arguments, because, I mean, we have to have elections. We are a democracy, so we have to make sure that influence can't be made by anyone, that we have to trust our system. So that's what we should do, not stop having elections, because then we aren't a democracy anymore. So that was the arguments being used, because actually the Left Party of Sweden and SPAS, my organization, we wanted a referendum. We thought it was, in need of one compared to, for example, the European Union that we voted about, and also the Euro we voted about. So it would be a natural thing. But I think the rush was the most used argument, and also it created this kind of black and white, that either you were for NATO or you were for Putin.
Yeah.
And the people who tried to argue for the democratic aspects of why we should vote, they were really misstänkliggjorda, like they were questioned for their why they wanted that. So I think that was the biggest reasons. And also in the beginning, they were talking about, well, we will have an election. Then you get to vote on the ones you don't want to join NATO. But then everyone changed their mind more or less and didn't want it to be part of the debate during the elections either. So that's why.
So when you talk about everyone, you're talking about the politicians, you're talking about the decision makers, and it's Sweden actually threw out democracy at that time.
Yeah, I would say so, yeah.
That doesn't sound like, let's use the democratic process that we've always have done. So by pushing through in such a way, has anyone been questioned about that?
Yes, of course. But I think it's been so, the journalism and the opinion journalists, also the people with the strongest voices, they claimed that this had to be done the way it was done because the Swedish people didn't know its best, and the ones who tried to argue against this they were called spreading disinformation, and they were using the Russian narrative, and it was actually people who just were reminding us of what had been the foreign policy and the military non-aligned, that was called really naive and stupid and Putin huggers, all of them. So it was the perfect storm. It contained like the rush and the fear made their arguments. They didn't need to contain anything. It was just their opinion and their breath in a way. So they
were basically using the same tactics that the Russian or Putin uses to integrate or involve himself in elections, whether it's in Sweden or the US or wherever in the world. And I'm just amazed that could happen here in Sweden. Yeah. So the first time when I heard about it, I thought, oops, that's where gone democracy. However, there was an eerie silence, I would call it, from my perspective. I could not believe when it first happened. I could not believe that the silence, there was such silence, because I've always had the perspective of Sweden as being very much like, we will demonstrate against when something is wrong. And particularly citizens and even our Swedish peace activists throughout the whole NATO process. And so it was really, really weird. It was strange to follow the process. And when I spoke to people, they looked at me, don't worry about it. And I said, what do you mean don't worry about it? I thought Sweden is all about democracy. We are a democratic country. So I'm not sure why there was not a stronger reaction, even if you had those voices, those strong voices spewing out this disinformation, we got to do it now. No one took up, exactly like you said, no one took up the conversation about Turkey. Turkey, the only way we got in Turkey, I mean, I could be totally wrong, and I certainly hope I am. But, when I heard about, we're going to send them some planes. I mean, hello.
Yeah, and that's so sad with all of it also, because just 2-3 years before the invasion, Sweden banned all arms trade with Turkey after them illegally invading north of Syria. And now we just opened up for being, their ally, and also giving them everything they asked for. And that made our foreign policy really lose its spine, I would say. And also with all the compromises being made with Turkey, I think it's so sad. It was at least what I felt was the core of Sweden, that we stood up for human rights, and we were a small country but with a strong voice. And now we're just a small country being part of an alliance where we have no voice, and we just say yes to everything and just... Yeah, soon we will let the United States use 17 of our military bases without any questions asked, more or less. So it's been a turnaround that's really frightening. And I think with this kind of working with these kind of issues with like defense politics and militarization, that it's always been said by the politicians that, oh, this is too complicated for you, it's too dangerous for you to know anything about, that's why we have everything secret, so you don't know what's best for you, you have to trust us, or your politicians, we will do what's best for you. So they tried to push that really hard. And in Sweden, I would say a big change was when the Swedish Democrats, like the racist party, I still call them, they turned and they promised Moderaterna that if they could be part of this new government after the elections, they would support a NATO membership. And with them changing, they had a majority even without the Social Democrats, so they could change the opinion of NATO, and that stressed the social Democrats so much that they decided we have to feel the same because everyone wants this. But I think it was a fake image that everyone wanted. Was the strongest voices that wanted it, that gained most from it. So the silence you're talking about, I think it had a lot to do with that many people felt it was too complicated for them to think differently about, that it was much easier to feel, yeah, maybe it will make us safer. At least now, what else can we do? Be part of Russia? So the narrative was so black and white that the majority of the people felt the same. And it was also, it's so interesting, when I started writing the book, I realized it had been 2 weeks after the restrictions had been released from the COVID pandemic that the invasion was. So the Swedes had already been, like, it had decreased so much for being on the streets and doing protests and stuff. People had been used to a different kind of life. And now we were all preparing for going back to normal. And then this happened. So it was also affected by that, I think, that we had been so affected by the pandemic in many different ways that this came as a gigantic shock that people weren't prepared for at all.
What do you think are the consequences of Sweden's NATO membership?
Well, I think, as I already mentioned, us being this really strong voice for disarmament and human rights and the foreign policy we've been having, I think that has been the biggest consequence for us, that we don't, well, the next time Turkey invaded north of Syria, we did nothing. We didn't even ban it or, whatever. Where is it you say that you... I have such problem. Well, our government didn't object against it. We just let it happen. So I think that we have lost. And also it's the work we have been doing for disarmament of the nuclear weapons. That is for sure. That all that work is gone now. Because Sweden had been really active in the international ban that UN voted for, and Sweden voted yes, but we never signed or ratified the ban. But we've always been one of the strongest voices internationally for disarmament and for nuclear disarmament in particular. And than we know, and that's also so sad, I think, that many, many countries have listened to Sweden and been inspired by Sweden and felt like if Sweden does it, we can do it. It's the same with the feminist foreign policy we had that has inspired so many other countries who gotten more of a feminist foreign policy. And now we don't have that anymore. I think that it's also so sad that we had this mind-blowing positive view of how foreign policy should be made, that we will now, it's like in the history books for 2 chapters that we will forget about, more or less. But no, we will change it, of course, of course. Hope is always something I carry with me. And in dark times, we always have to believe that we will change it again. So hopefully we will. But I also think, yeah, the dependence that we are, because during, after Sweden applied for a NATO membership, it took almost 2 years for us to be let into the alliance. And during that time, when Finland was joining, then Sweden was actually more or less surrounded by NATO countries. And even some of the military experts that had been really pro-NATO said, yeah, in a way, this is even better. We are being military non-aligned, and we're surrounded by NATO countries. So we are not being a threat by ourselves, and we're also surrounded by NATO countries. So the risks of us being invaded is like so small with this, if we have this deal, if we just stay like this. But then it was not an option anymore. We couldn't change our minds. We had been working so hard for this, so now we just had to do what it took to be let into the other countries that are really questionable, some of them, and also now with the elections in the States coming up, and Donald Trump, who either wants to just skip NATO or just make peace with Putin in 24 hours. I think it says a lot about that the decisions are being made above our heads and has very little to do with NATO or not, in a way. There were a few good journalists who were really knowing this, like the security issues and the really strong voices that existed within them, that didn't react in the same way as the rest did. I think the rest were really, they didn't know what hit them in a way. So suddenly they started inviting military experts talking about facts. And they didn't invite critical voices, or if they did invite critical voices, the critical voices were there for their opinion and their being an activist, and the rest were the experts exclamation marks who were talking about their opinions. So they created this image of that the people who knew, the rational ones who uniforms, they were giving us the facts and what we should believe in, and then they had one voice saying something else. And also it was how they asked questions that I was being questioned for my opinion all the time, but the experts, they just got to say what they said. And I think that they thought they did a good job, but that was also something I looked at in my books of where did the experts they invited come from. They were from lobby organizations for NATO who had been open about it. And they also had, I had one scene in my book where I have been booked for a TV sofa on the Swedish Public Service Channel. And the other guest called the researcher and said, I don't want her. I don't want to debate against Agnes. I want someone who knows the topic better. And then they exchanged me for someone else. And that's really bad journalism, that you let the guest decide. That's not what you should do. And the guest also wanted NATO very much didn't want someone who argued against NATO with him in the sofa. So I think that... they failed totally, and it was also something that a few of them realized afterwards. The heads of the organizations, like the bosses of the radio and the TV, they didn't recognize it. They claimed still that they did a really good coverage and that they did a really good job, but they did the same mix up with Ukraine and Sweden, that they were talking about that the invasion of Sweden coming more or less, and actually the Försvarsmakten, like the defense ministry or whatever you call it, they before the invasion, they went out saying that the journalists, they are frightening the people right now. We don't recognize this image of Sweden being threatened of an invasion. Please stop. Please keep calm. So it was some kind of, everyone was just getting hit by this emotion, and they ran on it, and that included the journalists, unfortunately. And I still, it hasn't gotten better, I would say, if you just look at the coverage now of what's happening in Gaza. It's been the same kind of words being used, and also the narrative.
You know, when I specifically remember in Sweden when you had this person, some military from the defense force, speaking on television at, I think it was the early news, and he talked about when the war comes to Sweden. And I sat there and I thought, I hope not one child is listening to that jerk. Next day, the television, that was the Swedish television, I don't know who, what channel it was, but I do recall, had received numerous complaints from children because this man had scared the living daylight out of the kids. He was in full uniform. And I thought, are you serious? But hey, that was to prepare for war. And I thought, really? So my next question to you is, do you think there is a threat for war here in Sweden?
I think we can prevent that from happening if we decide to. I think there will be no war in Sweden if we do our best to make sure that other options than just being threatening and being polarizing as we are, then we will not get invaded or invade someone in the name of NATO, for example. But the rhetorics is really, I think it's really saddening. And I think we're forgetting how important it is to that peace is not something we just have. It's something we do and something we create and something we have to defend in so many ways. And it doesn't just covering our borders with military. It's not the way to do it. It's the other things we do that we show what kind of country we are and that we are not threatening anyone. And I think the rhetorics are not going our way right now. And just what you talked about now with the children, I told you about the Ukrainian family we had living here, and three of them moved to Canada, but their oldest son stayed. And after now in January this year, when there was a lot of talk of Sweden being in war any day now, he actually called and asked, where will you go now when the war is coming? And he was so afraid. And I think we have to think about that a lot, that the like threatening of war is just as dangerous. It's just as dangerous. We have to protect our human rights and civil rights and democracy. That is what we have to do to prevent us being in war. Otherwise, there's, of course, a risk that nuclear weapons will be used and that will affect Sweden. There are so many risks that we would be in a war, maybe not on Swedish territory, but now talking about young people going to war for Turkey, for example, like being part of NATO and the tensions being as they are, of course there's the risk that Swedes will be part of a war. That is a big risk. But on our territory, I can't see why anyone would invade Sweden. Hopefully we will not have that situation ever. But we have to work actively for preventing it. It's nothing we can just take for granted, of course.
So democracy, it's all about democracy.
Yeah, I would say. And also that we don't frighten our people. And also that within Sweden, we have to work to not polarize and be let racism take over and let human rights just decrease. We have to defend our democracy and everyone's rights here, because that creates a strong city and a strong country that would be like resilient in case of an invasion also. Because I mean, who would invade a country who's just with people who wouldn't be occupied in a way? I mean, that's also something we have to talk about, that we want to create and defend the values that makes Sweden special. And we don't do that with military forces, in my opinion. We do it with investing in that the things that make people feel safe and feel valued.
Mm-hmm. And there, of course, when you think about the military spending now, it is taking away from whether it's from your hospitals, from your education. You know, I mean, it's, you know, it's just in the name of militarization, we are losing a whole lot of in the welfare sector that Sweden has always been recognized for. Yes, it's going to be interesting to see which way Sweden is heading. And it's good to know that even knowing so much as you do, you are hopeful, and you are also on the side of that we can rectify things, that there is hope. And I think that's a message that I think is much more needed today than at any time, considering climate change, considering the threat of artificial intelligence and all the kind of rubbish that comes out of that area. I mean, yeah, so we need people like you, and I'm so, so grateful that you speak about it so openly.
What choice do I have? I ask myself. I have to do what I can with the voice I have.
I'm really happy that you have shared your story today. And just a quick final question. What is next for you?
Well, I'm actually going to start working for the Fair Trade Sweden. In a week from now. I'm going to start working as the responsible of the press relations for that organization. So it's a bit of a step away from the peace movement, but I'm still active as a peace activist, and I'm going to continue do lectures and a little tour with the book even this year. So I'm continuing working for human rights, actually.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And I hope at some stage later on in the future, I'd love to invite you back.
Yes. Yes, you may. It was really nice talking to you.
Yes, you too. Thank you so much and have a great day.
You too.
And you have been listening to the podcast Sånt är livet I Sverige, or in English, That's Life Here in Sweden, with me, Lisa Orsimäki. Till next time, take care of yourself and each other. Bye for now.